Good evening. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is Friday, the 15th of March, 2024, and this is a rare Friday evening podcast. And this evening, my guest is Ryan Smith, who is the treasurer, I gather, for at least a few more days. Of a Nova Scotia political party called the Atlantic Party. And I have been aware of their efforts for a number of years. Regrettably, the party has filed for deregistration, which means that we are sort of seeing the end of, I think, an important political initiative to break the wall of the great Canadian partyocracy. That is the monopolization of the Democratic Party by the Conservatives, Liberals, NDP, and possibly the Green Party. And Ryan is here to discuss all of this great stuff with me this evening. So welcome, Ryan. How are you this evening?
Thank you very much. Good, good, good. I should just point out that I have not filed for deregistration yet. I'm also the official agent, so that's
Okay,
what
so you're the official. I was once an official agent. That's a thankless job.
it's probably, people don't realize it, but it's probably one of the most powerful positions in a political party. And it's difficult, and nobody wants to do it.
Well, that's right. That's right. I mean, you get all of the responsibility and none of the rewards, and all of the liability, I might add, I think.
Yes.
And none of the rewards. So kudos to you for having the willingness to take that on. But did you know when you took it on how much it really entailed and how much responsibility there was? Or did you just sort of say, yeah, I'll do it and figure it out later?
That get it done. It's not my cup of tea. It is absolutely not the kind of thing that I am well suited for.
It's
I
actually
said
not
that.
the type of thing that anybody is well suited for, Ryan. It's just that some people sort of do it and take it on. But congratulations for taking it on. So you have
Some
not
people.
yet filed for whatever we'll call a dissolution of the party. You've not yet done that.
Voluntary deregistration. No, I have not filed for it yet. I've got to do a bunch of things,
Wonderful,
right.
wonderful. Maybe the result of this discussion tonight will be that you'll keep the party on.
I rather doubt it, the but who knows? Weirder things have happened.
Okay, so my awareness of the Atlantica Party actually goes back, I believe, to 2008. Let me just check here. When I was running, let's see, a site for independent candidates, and somehow or other I made contact with Jonathan Dean, who I gather was the founder of the party. Is that correct?
Yes, Jonathan and one other fellow founded the party, and the other fellow eventually left. Jonathan continued. The Atlantica Party dissolved and reformed as the Atlantica Party Association of Nova Scotia. So there are two distinct legal entities there, but it's the same party.
But it's the same spirit. So my first interaction with the Atlantica Party actually goes back to October of 2008, interestingly. So that means that it has been in existence for over 16 years, I guess. Is that correct?
Yeah, almost. If I look at the Wayback Machine, it looks like it goes back to 2006, but I
I think that's right. I mean, it existed. It certainly existed when I had my initial contact with Jonathan. It was just an email exchange. So I guess the first question I would ask you is, why the Atlantican Party? What were the original founders trying to achieve? How is it different? I mean, my impression was that it was essentially a party, a coalition of independent-minded people, independent candidates. Is that correct?
Close. Candidates that aligned with the same kinds of values.
And what would those values be?
Broadly speaking, classical liberal.
Okay. That seems to me to be pretty much what it was. There is a statement of principles on the existing site. And let's just see here. Let's see. Platform. Yes. Okay. So here we go. Now, the platform, is it your view that it would be roughly the same as it was in 2006?
I moved to Nova Scotia in 2016 and joined the Atlantica Party in early 2017. And I don't really know much about, those early years, but what I would characterize the party as classical liberal. However, on top of that, there were a lot of people, supporters of the party and people in the party, that also supported the idea of Eastern separation, or from Canada, basically, to have an Eastern province bloc, because they didn't see how Confederation was really sort of benefiting the Eastern provinces. That was never part of the platform, but that was one of the things that people would discuss, and it invariably was always kind of like, well, that's not something that we're gonna run on, but maybe someday it may be feasible.
But, well, okay, so that suggests that the party was and was composed of a group of individuals who felt a need to take, take responsibility for Nova Scotia.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you talk about classical liberal, and just to go over some of the policies and principles here. I mean, interestingly, you start with a quote from John Stuart Mill on liberty. The liberty of the individual must be thus far limited. He must not make himself a nuisance to other people. Well, that's certainly classical liberal, isn't it?
Yes.
And then guiding principles: all individuals have the same inherent rights. Our current political system produces poor decisions and needs reform. We need more citizen involvement. Nova Scotia can be a wealthy half province using the free market. Well, this is, very much a lot of, take personal responsibility. Democracy is not a spectator sport. You've got to get involved. The current political parties are failing the residents of the province in that regard, etc. And then we have, some specific details on that. Reduce or eliminate business taxes, balance budget, eliminate debt. Government should work for you, not the other way around. Stuff that in many ways sounds like Mike Harris's common sense revolution in Ontario, minus the yoke of the party. Would that be right?
I was actually living abroad when Mike Harris was there in Ontario, I really didn't keep up on much on Canadian politics, while I was living overseas. So, you know, it was almost what 20 years.
Well, basically, you know, it's the job of the residents to manage the province, to take care of themselves, not the other way around. It's not for people to be managed by the government, right?
Yes.
Okay,
Yeah.
so that's what I mean by, you know, the Mike Harris common sense revolution, et cetera. But that was very much in the context and the confines of the Ontario Conservative Party. And what seems to be going on here with the Atlantica Party is that this is not a top-down party. This is a coalition of like-minded individuals, you know, encouraged to contribute in their own way. I mean, is it your view? Is it the view of the Atlantica Party that the members of the legislature in Nova Scotia should represent the interests of their constituents as opposed to the party itself?
Yes, exactly. Because right now they don't do that. You
Now
know, they
let's pause on that for a minute because I would agree with you that that is a truly, truly radical idea in Canadian democracy as it stands right now. The idea that elected representatives represent the individual as opposed to represent the party to the individual. Would you agree?
yes.
And was that largely the message, the purpose, the spirit of the Atlantica Party?
Yes, yeah. One of the one of the principles for the party, you know, like if it ever gained seats, and we if we ever had, you know, people sitting as MLAs, every vote was free. There's no such thing as a whip vote. You vote your conscience, you know, you vote for your constituents, you know, and what's best for, you know, Nova Scotia and, you know, the people who you are supposed to represent. You know, you're not supposed to, you know, represent the party, you know, with whip votes. Like right now, voting in Nova Scotia government is it's terrible. They don't even they don't re record it, you know, and let people know. You know, a lot, you know, a lot of votes are secret ballots, so you don't know your MLA voted, you know, for or against some bill, which, you know, may be good or bad for you. You know, so there's zero accountability, you know, in government.
That is extraordinary. That is extraordinary. I mean, that sounds to me like a party dictatorship.
Basically, that's pretty much, you know, every party in Canada, you know, is like that. You know, they votes are whipped. If you don't toe the line, you get kicked out. We saw that with you know, a few the people in Ontario getting kicked out of the PC party. It's disgusting and shameful, you know, how degenerate our government is. They're not accountable. They can do anything they want, and they never pay a price for it. You know, so again, this is sort of, you know, gets back to, you know, accountability and free markets. You know, in a free market, if you have a bad product or a bad service and nobody wants it, you don't have a business anymore. You have to serve your customers. You have to provide value to them. But that doesn't happen in government. You know, MPs, MLAs, MPPs, you know, do not pay any kind of price, you know, when they screw up, you know, because they have a monopoly. And there's, yeah, what can you say? You know,
Well,
it's
I mean, I the word disgusting was, you know, taken out of my mouth. Shameful, I agree. But you know, this goes on because the voters put up with it. All right. So, I mean, let's focus on this for a minute. So here you are, the Atlantica Party in Nova Scotia. And you know, and I really respect and admire what you collectively and individually achieved over this period of time. I mean, very, very few. You know, it's hard to create a political party. I mean, it really is. I mean, I've been, I mean, I've seen this firsthand. Okay, it's very difficult to do this, and few people realize how difficult it is. Why, though? What is the psychology of the average voter that seems so inclined to reflexively move in the direction of the partyocracy and reject the opportunity to be represented by somebody who will represent them? I mean, how is this possible? Can you help me with this?
Yeah, it's pretty simple, and it's pretty sad. People will vote for a big party because they're not voting for anything, they're voting against something. And they'll vote for, a big party because they don't want this other big party to get in, and this party that they actually like and agree with, they don't have a chance of getting in, so why vote for them? We'll vote for these guys instead, who aren't going to be actually representing us, but they're not going to be as bad as these guys. So we got to stop these guys. People don't really vote rationally, because that isn't very rational at the end of the day. Because if you just keep continue doing that, you're just going to keep getting garbage. So, but if you get out of that sort of frame set and actually vote for something, it may not win, but that doesn't matter, because eventually people are going to notice that more and more people are voting for something, not voting against something, and it will build. That's inevitable. But people only worry about this election. They don't worry about this one, the next one, the next one. They've got a very, very short-term view on things, because individuals don't have the kind of same perspective as organizations do. An organization can look very long-term. It can also look very short-term. But individuals in their lives, are sort of much more constricted, because they have to worry about putting food on the table today. So the ability of individuals to sort of plan ahead, isn't as great as that as you have for organizations that can act in both short term like that and much longer term. Because they're not going to die in 20 years or 30 years or whatever, depending on how old you are. They will continue. So the it's that, voting against a party, voting against somebody that really is the is. The biggest problem, instead of voting for.
All right. So, in summary, what you're saying is that number one, they really don't have people don't have the time to be rational because they're too busy trying to put food on the table, et cetera, et cetera. Number two, they vote for the familiar, really as a way of trying to punish a party they don't like, even if they know they're not going to get something that's helpful to them. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes.
I mean, you're right. It makes absolutely no sense. But what's happened is in these first world democracies is that the political parties have absolutely captured the democratic process and don't allow anybody else to participate. And all over the world, what we have is instead of people who have a government, we have governments that essentially own a people, right?
Yes.
And nowhere is this more apparent than if we look south right now to the United States and look at the Democrats and Republicans and the whole Biden-Trump thing. I mean, isn't that extraordinary?
Yes. The US politics absolutely suffers from regulatory capture. And it's more obvious how the U.S. suffers from regulatory capture compared to here in Canada, which still suffers the same problem.
Well,
but it's not exposed as easily.
Yeah, but you know what mitigates it to some extent in Canada is that there's more than two parties. You know, the problem with the U.S. thing is that there, you know, there's only two parties. Though, interestingly, you know, I have a sense that this might be the first time that there's a breakthrough, on the part of independent candidates. I mean, they're not going to win, but I think that they may get enough votes to make a difference here, which is important. But it seems to me that this has gotten to the point where individuals in first world democracies are completely and totally irrelevant. They exist only for the purpose of voting. Yes?
Pretty much, you know, we're treated like cattle. You know,
and they're even told in advance with scorn in Nova Scotia by the coalition of the Liberals, NDP, Conservatives. In the United States, by the pact between the Democrats and the Republicans, where they, you know, they essentially scorn the voters and say, well, you know, get out and vote for us anyway, even though we absolutely say up front that our allegiance is to the party and we're not going to pay any attention to you anyway, right? You're even lucky to be able to vote, yes?
Yeah. The U.S. system is distinctly different than Canada, and they do have a better system. It has been completely corrupted, and is, you know, God only knows if it's beyond repair at this point or repairable. But you know, a constitutional republic versus a parliamentary democracy, you know, is certainly better. The U.S.
Constitution. What would you say the difference is, and why is the difference important?
Well, if you look at the Constitution here in Canada versus the United States, in the United States, the Constitution sets limits on government. Here in Canada, the Constitution says, we're going to let you do this. So thank us, you know, and be grateful. It's disgusting, you know, and it's just unbelievable that people don't see this, that the level of contempt for us, you know, for the citizens, you know, we don't, you know, own the government or what that they own us. If you look at the Constitution and how it's written in Canada and the United States, fundamentally different, completely different starting premises, you know. I could rant about that forever.
Well, so I mean, a lot of this, of course, comes down to history, right? Because, you know, the basis would be the British North America Act, which at its inception certainly had no concept of individual rights, right? Other than just sort of a British sort of sense of rule of law. But I'm not sure that, you know, I think, you know, it's interesting to compare those two political systems. Each one has advantages over the other in certain respects. But where they are definitely a one at this point in 2024 is that neither operates to serve the interests of the individual voters. That part of it is very clear, right?
Yes.
So, you know, back to this again. You would think, all right, that people in Nova Scotia would be so pleased to have a political party, to have the opportunity to vote for people that would actually represent the ridings or whatever they're called. What do you call them in Nova Scotia?
They're ridings.
Ridings where people live. But yet, they won't.
Yep.
they won't support these kinds of parties. You know, you sent out an email yesterday indicating that your intention to dissolve the party was because really of a lack of interest. The lack of interest in having a party that represents the voters, isn't that what it really comes down to?
I wouldn't say lack of interest, because there are a lot of people that like Atlantica, a lot of people that support it, but it's a matter of, warm bodies, volunteers doing the work. And I think this is kind of a general problem for people that are, on that sort of classical liberal freedom libertarian, idea. They are out being productive, working, doing things, and they kind of just, don't have time for all this other, stuff. Leave me alone, let me, make some money. They're not interested in wielding power over other people, whereas what you have with some of the other parties is you can clearly see when they're some of these people are talking is they like power. And that's who you don't want in government. You don't want people who want power, to want to exercise power over your life. If I ever were elected, I would work to get rid of as much power as possible and give it to people. Because you have, what, there were 50, or I think there are now 55 MLAs here in Nova Scotia. And there are about 1 million people. So if you think about, the kind of computing power, imagine they're all computers. If you have 55 computers and you've got 1 million computers, which one is going to outperform the other? You can't have 55 people making, good decisions for 1 million, but those 1 million people can make good decisions for themselves. And, that wielding of power is just purely destructive. There's nothing good about it. The more power you have, invested in the people themselves, the freer your society, the more prosperous your society, the healthier, the better of a society you have. R.J. Rummel did a lot of work on democide, which is government killing people. Their citizens.
Never heard that word, democide. That's a word?
Yes. Yeah. It means
D-E-M-I-C-I-D-E,
government.
democide?
DEMO side. It means when a government, kills its own citizens. Now,
Really?
what he found was that the freer the society, the more democracy it has, the less likely you're ever going to see that. And that, the more authoritarian, the more tyrannical a society is, the more totalitarian, the greater the chance of that happening.
Well, pausing on that, I just pulled up a definition of this. I've never heard the word before, democide, but here it is, DEMOCIDE. The murder of any person or people by their government, including genocide, politicide, and mass murder. Democide is not necessarily the elimination of entire cultural groups, but rather groups within the country that the government feels need to be eradicated for political reasons and due to claim future threats. Now, a couple of things come to mind. That reminds me very much of the untimely death of Navalny in Russia. Assuming that he was murdered, would you regard that as a form as democide? The Russian opposition.
The term is technically defined by R.J. Rummel, I would suppose so. I would have to, go and just, check what Rummel says exactly democide is to say whether that counts or not.
Well, here it goes on.
Yeah,
According to
but
Rummel,
basically, yeah.
genocide has three different meanings. The ordinary meaning is murder by government people due to their national, ethnic, racial, or religious group membership. I saw a flash on TV today as I was walking through a lobby, something to the effect that, can this really be? That India has a new form of citizenship that excludes Muslims? Let's just see. India's citizenship.
I don't know anything about it. I would have to
Let's
look
find
into
out
it.
here. Excludes Muslims. This is apparently new. I mean, what we're seeing is, these are, well, here we go. ABC News, if this is accurate. Well, here's CBC. Shall we go with CBC?
I don't think it
Since we're
matters.
in Canada. All right, India's new citizenship law for religious minorities leaves Muslims out. Well, that seems to me to be an attack on a certain group by the majority government, wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
India is providing a fast track to citizenship for religious minorities seeking refuge in the country, except Muslims.
India has a storied history with Islam, and
Does. Well, I mean, that's one aspect to it, but that does seem to me to be another example of what you're talking about. I mean, governments are not behaving too well these days, are they?
yeah, I brought up the Rummel example because I think that he didn't quite go far enough. He mentioned he had that particular focus there, but I think you can that it extends further to saying the freer the society you have, what I had said previously. The more freedom and the more power the individuals in a society have, the healthier, the wealthier, the better the society is, all the way around. When you start concentrating power, you start having your wealth goes down, the health of the society goes down, everything starts deteriorating because everything's a one size fit all for everything. And one size fits all is just a stupid solution. It's just dumb. Like what's right for you may not be right for me, or maybe we have some shared interests over here that are good for both of us. Everyone has their own situation and goals and wants and desires, and how one person wants to live their life, another person may not like that. They may want to do something entirely different. And when you start trying to restrict what people can do, you start damaging society because you're restricting people's ability to create wealth. Like here's a silly example here in Nova Scotia. A number of years ago, there was a regulation or law passed, and installing heat pumps, could only be done by certain people. And now your average HVAC shop no longer could do that. So they're perfectly well, qualified to do it, but they can't. And the same I'd mentioned pharmacists are perfectly well capable of doing some things that doctors do, but they're not allowed to. But if you want to fix the health system, why don't you let the pharmacists do what they're qualified to do? Give them more freedom, and then your doctors won't have to do that, and they can take on more patients. We've got a terrible healthcare system here, but we have regulations that are restricting freedom and contributing to the healthcare crisis in Nova Scotia. freedom means prosperity. You know, the lack of freedom means poverty and misery.
So why are people voting for poverty and misery over freedom and prosperity?
Because, you know, they're voting against something. They're not voting for something. You know, I don't want the liberals to get in. I don't want the, you know, PCs to get in. And I don't want, you know, so I'm going to vote for these guys because they got the best chance of, you know, beating these guys. And I don't want them in. You know, they're not voting for anything. You know, they're just voting to stop, you know. Like there was a South Park episode with a giant douche and a big turd. And that's how people vote. They either hate the giant douche or they hate the big turd. And that determines how they vote. So you either get a giant douche or a big turd, you know, instead of voting, you know, for something that you believe in and for something that you, you know, really actually want.
So maybe the message should be, why vote for a party that promises to not represent your interests when you can take a chance on one that will?
The big parties, you know, here in Nova Scotia, you know, there's you know, the NDP, the PCs, the Liberals, the Greens run, you know, people paper candidates. They only ever have like one or two real candidates. Then there was Atlantica. There's NS United, Nova Scotia United. That's a new party as well. But the big parties, their solution to every single problem, it doesn't matter what the issue is, they always have the exact same, you know, solution. Spend more money. They throw money at problems. That's not how you fix a problem. You have to put, you know, if you put some thought in, you can fix problems for free. Like I mentioned, you know, allowing pharmacists to do what they're qualified to do rather than stopping them from doing what they're qualified to do. And, you know, making only allowing doctors to do that. Well, that's free. That's a stroke of a pen. And that's more freedom, you know, for people, you know, in this case, for pharmacists, or, you know, or for, you know, people in the HVAC industry, you know, freedom means prosperity. And you can see it all throughout history. The freest societies are the best. The least free societies all throughout history are the worst.
Yeah, but freedom also implies responsibility, doesn't it?
Yes. I forget who it was. I think it was John Adams who said that the system of government that they now had was only suitable to a moral and religious people. Substitute in there, you know, I guess you could assume, you know, your moral religious person is going to, you know, accept responsibility for their own actions. And, you know, yes, absolutely. You know, it means responsibility, taking responsibility for yourself, you know, what an adult is supposed to be.
Yeah, but that's a pretty frightening thing for a lot of people. You know, these modern democracies have sort of evolved to the point where more people vote for a living than work for a living, right? And, you know, that's not a great recipe for, you know, what you're describing, for sure. And, you know, things evolve, you know, to that point. All right. So we're coming to a close, at least for now. So my first question for you is, what can be done to get you to not deregister the party and keep up your good work?
I don't really see it happening. You know, I've been the official agent and the treasurer, and I don't want to be either. You know, I would rather do other things. We would need, you know, like a lot of warm bodies, you know, dedicated, reliable warm bodies. You know, we've had volunteers. that, you know, they'll say, let's go, I'll jump to the moon, you know, and then you never hear from them again. You know, you need reliability, you know, you need to get things done. And, you know, if you don't have enough people that are reliable, and you, it's just not going to work. And, you know, the we just have not been able to get enough reliable people to continue.
Well, you know, sooner or later, the future of the country, I mean, depends on people, you know, veering away from this partyocracy. So in elections, I'm assuming that the party affiliation is beside the name of the person on the ballot. Is that right?
Yes.
So that wasn't always the case. It was not always the case in Canada. Do you think that in general, the democratic process in Canada would be improved if the ballots just had the name of the candidate and did not include the party affiliation?
That could help. I think the party system itself is, you know, has degenerated to the point where it's irreparably damaged. You know, the party system right now with whipped votes, you know, it's broken. It's just completely broken.
Well, it is, and on that note, but it's, you know, it's people like you and the Atlantic Party that are needing to repair it. I think we're out of time for tonight, and this has really been great. I really appreciate, well, first of all, I appreciate the work that you're doing and have done, okay? You know, leaving aside this, I think that,
Thank you.
you know, that you and like-minded people are absolutely essential for the future of the country, and you should be proud of what you've done. You know, absolutely. I'm sure that, you know, you don't get a lot of that, but you deserve that. So thank you very, very much for that. I mean, as a Canadian citizen and somebody who understands how much work this is. Secondly, I really would encourage you, okay, to see this at most as sort of a temporary interlude. Because look, there just aren't enough people who believe in sort of these traditional liberal democracies around, and you're one of them. So for God's sake, Ryan, don't become extinct.
No. I will probably you know, run as an independent. And what, you know, whether I don't need to run, you know, to win, but if I run, I can inject ideas into the discourse and possibly, you know, help steer things, you know, towards greater freedom and greater prosperity for people.
Well, that's exactly right. By running, you do win, and by your very existence in this, you do win. And never forget that. I mean, I've always felt that some of the most important contributions to the sort of political discussion come from the people who are not necessarily elected. Never forget that. Well, perhaps we can pick this up down the road. I thank you very much. Do you have any final message that you'd like to send out for anybody listening to this, about the past, present, future?
I suppose I'd like to thank all the people that have supported Atlantica, you know, the past candidates, you know, people who have donated, people who have volunteered their time, people who have you know, supported us, you know, just sort of out there, like on social media and whatnot, you know. Thank you. You know, we've it's been good, but yeah, now it looks like it's time to say goodbye.
For now. You mean see you later. Not goodbye, but see you later.
Well, for Atlantica, you know, it's goodbye for Atlantica.
Okay, well, maybe you keep the website up. Well, Ryan, thanks very much for spending part of your evening with me. Really appreciate it.
And thank you very much for having me on, John.